This was, I guess it was a good fishing place because this was not only fish camp, it was his rat camp, winter camp, summer camp as well. He stayed there the year round.
Yeah.
And I've never known Miles to live in a clavick. I mean, he go in for supplies for a while and then he's always out in the bush. He raised a big family.
He did too.
And real well, I mean, he was real good with the family. I call him, because the other children call him Dad, I called him straight Dad as a kid. And he was a real nice old man. I thought of him as an old man, maybe he wasn't that old, but I thought of him as an old man because he was white haired. His hair had turned white quick. But they used to, I know long ago in the 40s, like they used to look after the police dogs. You know, the police have dogs.
In what fort did they look after the dogs? Did you say in the fort?
In the 40s.
In the 40s. The
they looked after, yeah, they looked after Norris's dogs. Norris's used to stay in a clavick then. They looked after their dogs, so they had lots and lots of dogs. Just, and then if they didn't look after the police dogs, it was always somebody's dogs they're taking care of. I mean, these people that ask them to keep their dogs, they supply them the fish net, and I guess they pay them a little per every month. But it was good fishing. They used to, I don't know how much fish or how much weight went into one bundle, but it sure was
dry fish.
It sure looked like a whole lot of fish anyway that made one bundle. They sold these fish, dry fish bundles to the police.
So
I guess it was for dog feed.
In the 40s, the Dillons were doing commercial fishing in the Delta.
There
in
was,
the 40s, right?
There was Bill, Tom, and John, and their dad. They all did it together, and I think they all shared. I think it was Tom. I knew Tom and Bill had a stage set on one side. Not stage, you know. Well, it's sort of like stage where they had their smokehouse. It's just built same as a stage with these four big logs, and then they got racks across it for smoking and high. Yeah, but old man and John, they had a big tent, something like a 14 by 16, an old one, you know, an old battered tent made into sort of frame tent like. It's built pretty good, put up real good, no flooring, of course. It's tender, it's got holes all over it, it has to be rotten to use it for this. Then they put racks up inside it, and then they got these big fireplaces underneath. And that's how I guess he had real good fish. They had a lot of kids. I remember there was then Bill and Alice, the oldest ones, they just had one child. John and Annie later had one child also with Clara, because I was with them.
You stayed with your Aunt Annie? And you spent at least one summer in these fish camps?
I spent more than one summer.
In the 40s?
Well, look at... I forgot what year it was. I spent more than one summer. If I didn't go to Tuck anyway, I spent the summers in fish camp.
Now, before I ask you, where was his fish camp? Was it?
Just right along the Mackenzie River, across the, it's not very far from the Cullinex place.
Around the Clive.
Yeah, on this side of a Clive. It's right in the Delta.
Yeah, I just didn't know where
and even now, I don't know about this year, but even in the later years after the old man died, I know that the police still go and do their own fishing at this place, and some other people go fishing there because it's a real good fishing place.
What kind of fish is another question?
White fish mostly, because those make the dry fish.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, some jackfish too. But they used to have a lot of fish nets set out. Their oldest, no, not their oldest, but the daughter then that wasn't married was Winnie. She's in Sachs Harbor now, Carpenter, Winnie Carpenter. She she and myself. There's son Tony in the army now. Ed, George, Noel, Douglas, a whole slew of them. We used to, well, Winnie and I, one summer I remember there was a Taylor family living there too. Their mother, the mother and two sons and a daughter. The daughter is at Aradi now in Tuck, and she's older than myself. Anyway, I was younger than, very much younger than the both girls, but John had a, John always had, they all had outfits, but John always had a little bigger kicker. He had a real old-time 8-horse Alto. You could hear it from miles away. It's real loud, like an egg beater, you know, real loud. Anyway, if I were uptown in a Klavik, if I were around the restaurant or the store and I went out and I heard this kicker, I knew who was coming into town, I'd run home. You could hear it. And the girls and I, anyway, we used to go in this boat. He had a big 22-footer canoe. Used to get in it and I knew how to run it, but it was pretty hard for me to crank it. So we used to, I attached a rope onto the starter, you know. I made a knot so that at the end of the starter was a 1/4-inch rope. I'd be beside the kicker, I'd have it all fixed, just ready to start. They're not like these new style kickers, you have to prime them on every little thing. You have to. Then I'd have one of the girls stay in the middle of the canoe and one at the bow. They're all holding on to this rope. They all help me to pull.
Oh dear.
We used to go across the Mackenzie. On this side was, you know, deep. They wouldn't allow us swimming. There's a lake right attached onto it that was pretty shallow, but we didn't think it was much fun. Across the Mackenzie, sort of, well, the mud is hard, you know, it gets real hard like this. You can just walk along the beach and sort of sandy-ish.
Opposite.
Yeah. And it's real nice. We used to go across the Mackenzie with this. When it's a real nice morning, I used to drive the kicker across if we got it going. And I was only about 10. But anyway, when we got across these Arctic terns, all along the beach they got nests. We see them getting hatched. We catch them in the act of just hatching. But boy, they're mean, those Arctic terns. They used to come swooping down on us, you know, really, really. We could have really got our heads banged up, but we always had either aluminum pan or a bucket along for our heads.
Should have worn helmets.
And then one time we got caught in a storm across there. It got real windy. That's one time I really got scolding. I always asked permission before I went anywhere, but this morning it was really early. And when I went out to go to the washroom, I seen Winnie. So I told her, boy, I says, look at the water, just like glass. She said, yeah. She says, good time for swim. And I says, let's get Eva out of bed and go across. So we got Eva out of bed and we took off across.
With somebody's kicker?
With John's kicker. He'd heard us after we were gone. Then we were trying to make our way across. It got windy on us across there. We spent the day, it got windy on us. And we looked at some fishnets that were across the river too. Got really windy on us and I was just in between tears and everything, and we were trying to cross the Mackenzie and they come along with a skiff to rescue us.
And you say you went swimming over there?
We swim across the river because it was shallow for long as and real nice hard mud. We weren't expert swimmers, just starting to learn, beginners. But we learned how to swim by our own selves, us three girls. I used to, when in Uvik was first put up, this camp, we used to have a tent right straight across the river from the Imperial oil tanks. We used to swim across there all the time in between the fish nets.
You swam across the river?
Not across the river, no.
No.
Across the river when we were living there.
Yeah.
But we never went into town very much except for supplies, I guess, if we ran short from fish camp.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what did you do in the fish camp? Did you help them with the
fish? We learned to help them. The old man used to pick up the scrawny little fish and says, here you make fish out of that, dry fish out of that, and he taught us how to do it. I guess we were pretty messy at it, but he just gives us to do, you know, just we hang around and we ask him to do it.
You and who?
Winnie, the kids. But I used to look after those children. I used to keep an eye on them for Mrs. Dillon. And we used to have, there were so many kids, there was enough there for a baseball team almost. We used to play ball all summer in the heat. It's a flat on one side of the, just on the other side of the lake, real nice flat place there. We used to play ball there all summer when we weren't doing anything else, especially in the evenings. And the grown-ups used to come and join in with us.
Baseball or?
Any kind, any.
Or some other game.
It's not a name, there's no really name for it. We just make up our own games.
Can you describe it? Because I think I know what it is.
Well, I don't even know really. We get bored with one game and then we make up rules, new rules. Like maybe just the girls have the ball and then the boys try to get it away from us, and then if the boys got it, us girls try to get it away from them.
Yeah, we know that game.
It's a game clear across the Arctic.
Well, we played this in tuck too, either with any size ball, but we had more fun with the football. Tuck, we used to all gather, there's lots and lots of them used to gather together, maybe 30 kids or so, not just small kids, teenagers, mostly teenagers, and some adults pass by, we throw the ball at them and make them join in.
Yes, and how, I guess you wouldn't know with women playing with children on their backs, like
and
in the Eastern Arctic.
No.
They would come in with children on their backs.
And join the game with little kids.
Yeah, well, you mean playing ball? Well, I see women there. They got it, only they have their babies in their park. It's right inside, like here.
That's what I mean.
Then they join in the game.
Yeah, that's what
I
mean.
Sure.
Many a time we played Great Whale River, but not much since then. Frobisher, they didn't do it much. I guess it's dropped out here too.
Yeah, I never see that here, although I know every evening the town girls and boys, adults and teenagers mostly, used to get down. You see where all that junkyard is by the old burnt Ray Cox's garage, where Bruno's little place is down there, down in that fence, northern of dog yard. That used to be clear of all stuff.
Oh.
And these girls and the town people used to go down there and play baseball every night. They tried to hang on to the old games, but then they got no places to stay. Last summer I used to play ball with Claire all the time. We get a bunch of kids
down
together.
There.
Yeah, down. Well, you know where, now it's stolen again. You know where the DOT trailers are? The two white ones down there, across gullies? That was all clear then, and no trailer houses there. We used to get together and play down there.
But you lived down around there last year.
Yeah. There's a game called Prisoner Base. I even forget how they play it now. But I think it was it's sort of like a baseball, but they don't use a ball and a bat. They use a ball, but not a bat. I think it was about, and they have bases for people, you know, these people stand on the bases, and they get a home base, and a whole lot of them there, this is their team, and this is their team. And I would go to the base and I dare them to hit me with that ball or touch me or even touch me. I think it was with their hand, not with a ball.
Either way, I've heard of it.
But they had to have the ball in their hand.
And they didn't have to have ball, they could just touch you. Then I'd from the base, I run to the first base, and if I made it there, well, I'm safe. And then there's somebody else turn to take a run, and then I run. Then if we get home without nobody touching us, we made one round, we're home.
Mm-hmm.
But in between, if we ran and we got caught, then we're out. We're put in a field.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen
that. I've heard of
it. And auntie over with a ball, you know, going by the big house. We always try to pick a big a warehouse or something, and we'd have a lighter ball. Or any ball, baseball, but for hitting mostly we use this small, softer rubber ball. Well, you could get the rubber balls big in any size, but for hitting we got those mostly because they don't hurt as much. There'd be a team on one side of the house and a team on the other side of the house, and we'd say, "Auntie over," and throw the ball. And then if they didn't catch it on the other side, they'd say, "Auntie over," and throw it back. And if somebody caught that ball when it came over, then we all snug around. And if we hit one of them with a ball or two of them, then we won them onto our side until we clean the other side out.
Mm.
I mean,
now where was this play?
In a clavic, in the bush, in Tuck.
In a Inuvik?
I never seen it here. I've seen children do it now, even in
yeah.
Inuvik.
I meant where did you play it?
Tuck mostly and out in the bush. We did this
out
in the bush with a tent.
The bush?
Well, we used this smokehouse that we had. That's one of the favorite games we used to have in a fish camp. Just playing this auntie over around this smoke tent. It was put up high because you have to smoke it, you know. Smoke the fish in it.
And what kind of wood did they use to smoke the fish?
Rotten.
Driftwood or forest wood? Bushwood?
This doesn't matter what it is. We went along the beach, and if there's a lot of wood that's soggy, half wet, half dry, most we prefer rotten wood, we call rotten wood, that's falling apart, that lasts all day. We get them in. We can go in the bush and get these rotten stumps. We use that too.
And did you really try to fill the tent with smoke? Was this an object? Fill it densely?
Not densely, just enough. I think why they use smoke mostly is because, well, you could smoke the fish a bit. And I do know that I use smoke more to have the flies away than anything. The flies wouldn't go around where there's
smoke.
You
were really working with heat? More than with, you were drying rather than smoking?
Well, smoke dries and keeps the flies away. You can't have heat, fire just burning under there. You'll cook the fish that's in there.
Did you dry in the sun first before moving it into the tent?
You have to always dry it in the tent because of the flies. That's why we have smoke houses. Because these flies will just get it full of, they lay their eggs all over it, and then they wouldn't be eatable.
I see.
So they, even muskrats, anything we dry out in the bush, we have to use smoke. We have to. I don't like dry fish. I like it, but I could just eat a little bit of it because of the smoke, you know. I like, my mom, like if she makes fish out in the bush, she just dries it and has it way on one side, and yet she takes really good care that it doesn't get just a little touch of smoke on it. And they have to do this more to keep the flies away. I see the Indians' dry fish, it's just orange, just deep brown and just really smoke. The natives, when they make, because they have their sort of like in a house, I suppose, like the old man had, but the natives, the Eskimos, they don't have theirs as deep brown. They just have them slightly brown.
You're saying that the Eskimos smoke more heavily than
no,
the Indians
smoke
more
heavily than the Eskimos. Because I've never seen a smokehouse from an Indian, but I've seen Indian smokefish.
Yes.
In the store, and they're just deep brown, and you could see, you know, the grease ooze out like so. They're just dark, and they like it this way, I suppose. The Eskimo natives, they eat the Indian dry fish.
Oh.
They make it the same way, but only they smoke it more.
The Indian dry fish here then must look like the stuff from the Pacific coast, the smoked salmon from the Pacific coast that you buy in the store. Orange color.
Well, the Indian dry fish I know that comes from up the river is sure smoked, just orange in color, you know, just deep.
The stuff that Zemler sells that's
well,
real dry.
Yeah, well,
is that
the Indian dry fish,
about?
Uh-huh.
It's almost
uh-huh.
like leather. It's
sure.
So dry.
Uh-huh. The fish cut up in pieces, you mean, you know, in slits?
Well, it's like this and then it's sweating.
Yeah.
And it's about this color of orange.
Sure, and deep, you know.
And maybe only about that thing,
uh-huh.
and real dry.
Sure, that's it.
That's Delta smoke.
That's Indian fish, Indian dry fish. I think that's from up the river, like, well, Arctic Red and
mm-hmm.
up along those places, they come with a
mm-hmm.
canoe load of fish and sell it to Semler.
Mm-hmm.
But
so
I've never
right.
seen fish like that. I'm not saying that Indians or Eskimos, either one is cleaner, but I've seen Eskimo dry fish. I've made them myself. They're cut up evenly. They look clean because I don't know if the Indians wash theirs, but we wash ours and in salt and some always don't. I do. But I made a lot of money one summer across the river there fishing and hanging fish. I didn't intend to have a smokehouse that summer
yeah.
or just across there where we were staying across the Imperial Oil. We just got fish too much, more than what we could use, so I started hanging them. And people could found out somehow that I was getting more fish than I could keep, so they were coming across buying fish all the time. But we don't smoke them as much.
Mm-hmm. Did you always hang them indoors, under shelter?
Under shelter, because if you just leave them in the sun like this anyway, the sun cooks them. So I found this out. I had fish. I was inexperienced and didn't know anything about dry fish. I knew how to make them, but I didn't know why they always, I seen some people sort of shading them on the top.
Yes.
I didn't know why they did this. I thought they should let the sun get at them so they dry faster. So I just left them without shade, and I noticed the top always fall off where the sun is shining to. It sort of was like it was half cooked. It didn't dry. It was half cooked.
Well,
the summer I was across there, and I noticed that they were sort of half cooked. They weren't dry, and then a little smell to them. And I forgot who was this, but this Indian came across there and looking for fresh fish. And I asked her, I forgot who she was, but it was an Indian. Why does my fish get like this and I don't have no fire? It's
mm-hmm.
just smoke. Well, it's fire. You have to make a fire, and then once it starts burning good,
mm-hmm.
you put all this wood that will smoke on it. And once you get a wood that's damp burning, it won't go out, but it'll keep on burning real slow. Without the flame, just smoke comes up from it. It can ignite into fire, it's just smoking. And I says, why does my fish do that? I don't have no fire. She says, well, she says, you got it right out in the sun. The sun is just beating down on it, cooking it. She says, you put plywood or something, just pieces of plywood or some sort of shade on top. And I tell you, after I put this, you know, I just stuck pieces of plywood all over. And this, after I did this, they dried real good.
Do you still put a net out around here somewhere?
Last year we ran fishnet and we had all our free fish and we gave a lot of free fish away to people, but we will have a fishnet. But it's so hard around in Uvik, it's people look at your net so much, you know, they're looking at each other's net, help themselves to somebody else's fishnet. And we don't mind this as long as they leave us a fish, but then they're in a rush, you see, they're sneaking at the net, so they tear the fishnet up. We've had fishnet torn all up in a week, less than a week. They just yank the fish out of the net. This is what we don't like. I told Colin, we know people look at it. We've seen them from a distance when we're going there. We know who does it. We catch one or two people at it, but we know everybody does this there, and you couldn't do nothing to them, I suppose.
Do you say anything to them?
Well, when I see them in town, mind you, I give them a piece of my mind.
You do that?
Yeah, but it doesn't help. They'll go and do it anyway.
Must be thick skin.
But still, what we don't like about it is a bundle of fishnet is, and the twine and everything comes to over $30. Well, the fishnet alone is a little over $20, about $23, $24. Well, $23 average for a bundle. And then you get the backing twine and then you get the knitting twine. Plus, you have to finger it.
Well,
and then setting it out and all the mosquitoes. But what we ordered this kicker in, it's gonna be faster and you can go out in no time flat. So we're hoping if it comes in, we'll set a fishnet quite a ways out of town.
Mm-hmm.
If you do, I like to take photographs.
Yeah.
How is the supply of fish down here? If nobody took your fish, would you be able to get a good supply close by?
I could get a good supply for the winter if I didn't give it away.
Yeah.
I got no place to put it and it's not very easy to dry fish. Like here, it's not very many people, you see, and there's trees. I probably could put up a little smokehouse there.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, not. It couldn't be a house because we're not allowed to build any little sort of houses along
sort of a tent.
Our yards.
Mm-hmm.
But I could just put a little shade of tent or something. It better not cross my luck. But my mother's got a big deep freeze down there, so I could put a lot of fish in it.
Oh, she does?
Mm-hmm.
In her house here?
Just here.
Big
one. And if Mr. McKenna would get us a reefer, then we could get it put in there. We got quite a bit in John Dillon's one last year, but we didn't get very much out of it. Apparently he'd been giving some out to the people that's working with him, so we ran out pretty fast. I like fish.
Yeah.
I like white fish.
Well, I'm thinking now of the photographs. Not of the eating.
Yeah, well, Colin told me that he'd see if he could pick a time out. He just only has Sundays off, you see.
Yeah.
Sure.
Of course, we could look at our fishnets. Well, he's off 10 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
It wouldn't take us that long to look at the fishnets, but to take his time, he has Sundays off.
One question. Why did you last year live, was it last year you lived across from the Imperial Oil?
No, not last year. This was when there was no houses along here in Newvik, was in about the third year of swing, second or the third year. 59? This was, no. This was in 1958 summer.
And you came down here to work?
Colin
came
down here to work in 1956.
Oh.
See, 55, 56, 56. I think it was 56. In between 56 and 57.
From where?
From the Delta.
You mean he left the land and decided to come into town that summer to work?
Well, it's a real... Some
like
people
that.
Always ask, where were you living before you went to Inuvik? And we tell them Delta. When were you never left in a Klavik? Then, oh, sure, we did. It's all so mixed up because people never really had a town to live in. They never lived in a town, really. They lived out in the bush, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Colin was... Well, other day we were talking about it even. His family, despite their father is a very nice man, very honest. I've seen him, if somebody dropped something behind and or maybe left a pound of coffee behind and we were out of coffee and craving for coffee, he wouldn't touch it until the other people that had owned it came in. He's a real honest man, but his sons are known to be dishonest, except for Colin. Colin started trying to work, maybe because he stayed with Charlie Smith all the time. Most of the time, Colin was raised up more by his sister. His mother was ailing and sick after she had given birth to him all the time. Then Madeline was grown then, and she raised him up. She took care of him. And then Colin, I think, was 13 or something, 12 or 13 when Madeline got married. All this time, Madeline had him for a baby. And well, you heard of natives, they can sleep with their younger children for a long time on end. So Colin always slept either right beside Madeline, you know, bed to bed, right next bed. He took Madeline more for his mother. He never called her his mother. His sister, but she's more like a mother to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Charlie was the one that taught him how to hunt and things, you know. He was the one that taught him, showed him these things. And maybe, I don't know, well, his sisters are all nice, decent women. They're real honest women, very respectable. Except for the younger one in Cambridge is known to be, take little things. I know this because I've seen her do this at my own home. And Rhoda, I know she picks things all the time. Because a lot of times I miss things out in the bush there, and I'd open her suitcase and I'd find all my missing things in her suitcase. But Donald, well, he's bad for drinking, and I've known him to take things as well. Looks like the people don't, it's stealing. Every way you look at it, it's stealing. We think anything you take without permission is stealing. That's how my husband and I look at things. If you don't ask permission, you take it and say, and they know how to talk their way out of it. Oh yeah, this sure looks like my part of my kicker there, I tell Harry. Yeah, oh yeah, I meant to tell you about it and I forgot all about it. But that's nonsense. I don't think he'll forget to tell me about it. This never happened to me with a kicker part, but they talk this way. They can talk their way out of things ever so smoothly that it'll make you believe, but then it'll always happen again.
Yeah.
And my husband and I, we see this is not right. But then when, like they stay out there, Colin didn't like it, living with his family, because he's seen his brothers were growing, going the wrong way. I better take a peek. I promised Jeffrey that you can't see my house. Eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is it you want to look for?
He's got a fire behind the house, and I promised.
No, you can't see that.
No. Just come across me. You see, he's got a fire, making campfire tea
yeah.
behind there, but I think he'll blow it out.
Well, you want me to take a look?
No. I really forgot about him.
You want to see if that fire is out?
Just see that he got it out. You know,
yeah.
It's right behind the house.
I've seen it before. I mean, I know
so,
what
and there's so much fuel spilled all over the around the house.
Yeah,
But
oil saturated.
Anyway, Colin was telling me the other day when we were just, he told me this, you know. I was asking him, I says, why do people do that? And then he said, well, he said, I know how they feel. Because he said he, when he was growing up, he was so, he felt real funny. If he heard somebody stole something, right away his brothers would come in his mind. And if people came over and he said, you know, I lost my axe, a brand new one that was kicking around here. I just had it by the toboggan. You haven't seen it, have you? And then the people, because they know his brothers are this way, they think he might be this way too. And then he felt so funny all the time about it. So why I told you this is, he said that he's going to try to get on his own as soon as he can. And then when he was, I don't know how he, well, natives, I know quite a few natives, they think that their son and their daughters must always stay with them until they get their own home, like maybe when they got married.
Mm-hmm.
And Colin, his mother, said that they weren't to get away from her until they were 21.
Huh.
So when Colin was 21, then his mother helped him from working at places. I don't want you to go working at that company. I want you home here where we need you to work for us. So he respects his mother and father very much. He takes every word they say. And the old man today will tell you that of all his children that never spoke one word back to him is Colin. He's never spoken a word back to them. He's taken everything they told him as long as it's true and honest.
Mm-hmm.
And of course his dad is a very honest man. And I don't know where they'll pick this up, but this, his family is noted, like his brothers, you know, for taking things, that stealing, or little theft.
Mm-hmm.
And they may get this from their mother's side, because I know of that, we know of their uncle to be sort of that way. And on Dhamma's side, we don't know of anybody to do this. Now you might think, I always say Dhamma. This is the way the Eskimos always pronounce his name, is Dhamma. The white people write it down as Tuma.
Yes.
But it's really Dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he was 21, then he got in the first job he could. Well, before he was 21, when his mother went in a hospital for TB, he worked for Semler.
Oh.
You see, down at Napoyak at his mink ranch.
Yes.
He worked for Semler. And each time his mother went home, then he'd go back home. But then when he was 21, he joined the herd, the herders,
real
job, away from home. Now he was, but he was always trapping, and you know, everything he hunted, he trapped, he shot, it maybe, at 1 year he knew he, when the rats were about $250 to $275 and even $3 a hide, he got 1,800 rats. And he didn't get 1 cent out of it. His mother got all that. His parents got all that. His dad wanted to give it to him, but then they bought a whaling boat with it,
uh-huh.
A small whaling boat. But you see, Colin, he was, I guess, a very honest son, a good son, because everything he got, he gave on to his parents, because he never asked for it. He said many times, good.
Yeah.
Many times he wanted to ask for it, ask for a little bit, but he wouldn't get it. He was scared to ask for it. But then he became a herder, and he herded for about 2 years, and then I met him.
Uh-huh.
Then while he was herder, we got married. And 4 months after we got married, we went for a holiday to go and see the family. We went to his mother and his dad, and the sons and daughters, they never, well, the daughters, of course, they're married and they've got their own lives with their husbands, are all working. But the sons, they just left their dad alone, and he was sick and not in good health, and his mother was in poor health, and they just had Rhoda. Donald, of course, was there, but he's a no good kid. He never works hard at home, you know, he likes taking things easy. And so Colin quit the herd and stayed home again. he never was one to see his father to have no help, so he stayed home and helped, and that was the most miserable time of my life because it was my in-laws then. I loved my my father-in-law from the moment I seen him. But my mother-in-law, she was sort of hard to live with. But I made it up, you know, I took it. And about a year later, you know how mothers are. I don't think my son deserves a no good woman like that. She didn't think I was good enough for her son. But we, and the old man always took me on the side and say, you leave her be. You let her talk on and on and on and don't answer her or anything. She's just talking out of here. She doesn't even know what she's talking about most of the time. And you know, he was real good. And a lot of times I felt like running home to my mother, because my mother is far better than her, I thought. But then I took it all. And a lot of times I told her, oh, why don't you lay down and go to sleep? She'd get real furious, but she was a good, strong-willed woman. She was, I wouldn't even give you the age how old she was when she died in 58. But anyway, at her old age, she reached grade 3. She started school maybe when she was about 40 years. 40-something, in her late 40s or early 50s, she started doing school in the hospital with the help of a hospital teacher. And then when she went home, she kept right on doing it by herself, and she was reading real good when she died. She never gave up. I used to be washing dishes or skinning rats. My daughter, mind you, about eight months, it wasn't quite a year anyway that I was married, but I took most of that year of heck from her, you know. I took most of the chewing for almost a year, and then after she found I couldn't break or anything, then she became my best friend and a mother, you know. We became very well together, real good. You couldn't see us without the other, it looked odd. But she'd say, my daughter, come, she says, I don't know what's this. You pronounce this for me. And I would be in the middle of work and I'd get so tired of her, because she asked something to be explained. She come across, this is your joint. And she can't say joint, so she says, this is your joint. She says, yo. It's hard, your joint, for a beginner. So she says, how you say this? I says, your joint, your joint. He says, and then someday at night time I would be mending in the evening, mending or doing some sewing anyway. It was always sewing in the evening for me. And my father-in-law is on the side now. She thinks she's pretty smart because she's starting to have school and she's beginning to read, so she's outbeaten her husband. Her husband can read or write. And she's trying to teach him what she knows. She says, Dhamma, she says, this is a body of, you know, body of a man, picture, and it points, joint, head, arm, so on. And then in separate pieces, like just the joint is pointing onto a joint. And she says, Dhamma, she says, what's this? What's this? She asks. She's trying out how smart he is. And he gets mistakes all over, and she corrects him, and then I'm sitting back there, I don't want to laugh. Colin is sitting on the side, all trying not to laugh at her, and she'd say, ankle is it? She says, Anki, come. This, I says, ankle, angle. She says, Dhamma, where's your angle? Dhamma would say, here. No, she said, elbow, there. She said, you angle. And she says, you angle there. And Dhamma said, no, it's not angle, as joint. this would go on, they'd argue at each other about it, and Dhamma would really make like he really didn't know.
Mm.
He knew all the time what it meant. He just wanna put up an argument with his wife. He knew it's an ankle all the time, but he says no, joint. And Susie said, sure, joint, but joint to ankle, she says. No, she said, how come everything joint, he said. And everything like this, go on until one of us burst out laughing. And then we'd go over and I'd correct their argument for them and oh, everything. And the hard work she didn't, the worst thing she was always so mad about was why did she start trying to learn earlier. You know, she thought she was too old to learn, and then she always told her sons that it's never too old to learn, because she learned at a real old age. And but anyway, after we stayed with them, and then we went to my mom just for a week visit. We just always visited with them just every so often, then we'd go back to their parents. And then Colin put his foot down that first spring we were married. I was heavy with Lorna in my 8th month. And I did a lot of work. I did every work there was to do. I had no other outside help. There was a lot of, about 4 men bringing in their muskrats, and I skinned it all for them. And in the family, we don't believe charging each other or taking a little bit, but I did all their skinning and cleaning their rats for them for nothing, and preparing their meals, and I had to make lunches for them to take out when they went hunting. And I managed to go with Colin a couple of times after the ice was all gone, you know, just for a picnic sort of with Jeffrey. But the old woman was very good with Jeffrey, you know. She took him, in fact, they favor Jeffrey very much, more than their own grandchildren. They like him very much, like Colin takes the best care of him, and Jeffrey thinks he's got no other grandparents but the Dhammas. But we left him and went with to station maybe for just a trip, and then he was always run by his parents. His dad thought he could go anytime he wanted to because he was of age, but his mother thought she would hang on to him all the time. And then he got a little over 900 rats, and he did this. He could have got a double that hunt if he wanted to, but he knew I had no help and I was alone at home doing all the work. So he just brought back a little bit. Maybe he'd get 40 or 50 and come home, and he'd see, left all the rats behind.
You're talking about Colin.
Yeah. Well, then in the summer, like, when we went down to reindeer station and there was no way for us to go in, so we were going to go into a clavic with a little 3-horse kicker. I wasn't feeling very good all the time, and they were pretty scared of keeping me around. They thought I was going to have my baby any time, so they thought I should go into a clavic and see the doctor. This was on the 13th of June we left. But anyway, when we started to go, then they just gave Colin 200 rats and they kept all the rest. But then this is where Colin put his foot down. He says they're not going to take him anymore like that. He says he's got his own family to raise now. He's got a family now, so he's going to go on his own. I'm sorry, but every catch I got, every rat I got is mine. So he packed everything he got. Of course, this turned his mother against him for a while. But she come through because I guess she was just old and easily mad and all. But you see, they hung on to him for dear life until not they, I shouldn't say they, because the old man thought he should go, but she wanted Colin to hang on at home always. But he told his mother that he had to quit staying with them now because he's got his own family to look after. Then of course the old woman thought it was all my fault that I was taking her son away and all. But then, from there, we still stayed out in the bush. We went into camps. like we didn't have a real permanent place. We had tent always set up in Good Lakes. We moved around in the same area, of course, but you know, we trapped around this place, and then if the lakes around close by were trapped out, then we moved camp. But this didn't always happen. In the winter time, in the middle of the winter, we stayed with his parents.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought the world of it because we stayed with them. And then in 55 summer, was it? No. 56 summer, he went to the Dew Line. This job started coming out, and rats were very poor that year. Good price, but poor. So he went to the Dew Line. And first he left me. He asked me where I'd wanted to stay, and all the family went into a big squabble. His mother went in the hospital, I think it was. I'm not sure now, but I know she went in the summer of 1955. And then she came out, did she? Anyway, I forgot, but they went in a big squabble. His mother thought that I better stay where they could look after me, keep an eye on me and all, stay with the parents. But I told my mother, I don't think I'd like to. I says, I always knew Colin was gonna speak up for me if they should say anything,
yeah.
You know. And I don't think I'd like it without Colin, with their family. I said, so I think I'll stay with my side of the family. I told Colin this and the family. And not in front of his parents, of course. But then my mother says, well, you stay with me. I says, no, I says, I'll stay with my auntie. So then I stayed with my auntie that summer.
Annie.
Uh-huh. He left in June. So from June, July, at the end of June he left. So from June, July, August, September, October, after 5 months, we went to Oklavik. We stayed out in the bush. Inuvik was being built then. There was just, you know, mostly brush cutting, I guess it was. But that was in the summer of 56. Then we went to, we stayed at Annareik, that's John Dillon's camp. And John Dillon was logging with Harry Harrison. And the logs are being brought to Inuvik for good money. And Harry made his camp right in Annareik because it's close enough to Inuvik, East 3 then, and yet it's got a good supply of tall timbers. They're trying to get the 30 footers, and there was a good many of them, you know, there, right by, in along the same river. But I stayed with my aunt, and they didn't log right from the house. They went out with a boat. Harry had a boat. My granddad, of course, was there, but part of the summer he was in Oklavik. Later he came. But Harry, where was my mother? I think my mother went down to Tuck that summer. Yes, she was down at Tuck that summer. I'm just trying to wonder where Alec. Oh, Alec was going to stay with to help my granddad. Old Louis. The Harrison family had a tent outside the Annareik house, and I had a tent pitched up there, but I wasn't going to stay in it because my aunt was going to let me stay with her. She wouldn't hear of me staying in the tent, you know. So I stayed in the house with her. So I was the man of the place. Like, I looked after the fish nets. I took care that the dogs ate. I run the fish nets, and I see that we had enough wood there. And but this, they didn't ask me to do this. I did it because I was the one there. And then this, John said, well, when they were going to log right from the house. And we all together, these Eskimos, when you live next door to them out in the bush, they don't eat separate meals. They come along with their own bread, or maybe we don't ask them to do this, but they come along with a piece of bread and maybe some cooked fish, and we all put everything together and all eat together. This we were all eating in the house, and they're discussing how they're gonna manage. John says, well, we'll have Alec for our cook. And there was, I think they had a, they were alone. I think they had another hand, a third one, but I can't get him. They had a third hand, and I just can't recall who it is. But anyway, they're gonna log, and Harry says, too bad of our, we had so many dogs in our families. We gotta put our families first. Otherwise I could have stayed. Too bad the old man wasn't here to run our fishnets. We could have stayed right over there, you know, for about 4 or 5 nights and then come home and then pull the logs into Inuvik to E3. I said, well, I could run fishnets. I says, John says, yeah, well, I know I could depend on you to do all that, but we shouldn't. You didn't stay back to do the heavy work. He says, you're just gonna, we're gonna have you here and we're gonna let you have your fun this summer. You know, they think that now I'm gonna have one holiday with them. I says, no, I says, you buy me a kicker, I says, and we had our old rundown kicker. I says, you buy me a kicker and I promise you I'll do your fishing ever so good for you. So they bunched in together and bought a second-hand kicker. A 5.5 then was big for us those days.
Yeah.
So I had the kicker all to myself and I ran fish nets and everything for them. Then I went into a Klavik. We went to a Klavik maybe, you know, once every 2 weeks. And then we went to E3 maybe once every 2 weeks. They just take us along because we weren't in a road and give us a little free time.
Yeah.
And we'd pitch up a tent in Inuvik when we came, but Harry's wife was always good. She gave me a bed and mattress right in the boat. My aunt would just put a little tent up along the beach of Inuvik down here and live in it just one night, you know, camp overnight, and then we'd go back out. Then Semler had a tent pitched up down there, day and night store. Joe, my uncle, was a storekeeper with him, running the store with him. And then, not October, but September, early in September, we went to a Klavik, and one morning somebody rapped on the door, and who should come in but Frank Dennis, he's in Tacna, and he says, I just come from Tununuk. Of course, I was getting letters from Colin and he was sending checks all the time. And I said, oh, and you know, I didn't have to spend those checks on food or anything because of the work I did. They told me not to buy any food. Told me not to buy any food, and they made sure I had a lot of milk for the kids and everything. They were real good about it. But of course, I spend money on the children. You have to when you go to a town. We took them uptown and I bought clothes, that was all. But I bought some food too, something that I liked and they might have missed out. I always liked baking, you know, pastries. So most of the things I bought was pastries.
In a cloud.
Out in the bush I baked pastries.
Mm.
I bought the stuff from a Klavik and Inuvik. And when this guy says he just came from Tununuk and Colin is transferred to Tununuk. It's down here. That was site 3 then.
Mm.
He says, and he's asked Frank to bring me up if I want to go down to Tununuk. Boy, I was all in for it. And I says, well, I says, how much is the trip going to charge? He says, Colin already paid me for it. And he bought the gas and everything. So I says, well, could you go by, and I didn't know what Carlin had paid him. I says, could you go by Anjarig and pick up about 4 of my dogs and some of my stuff? No, we can't go that way. We're in a rush. And I thought, well, he says, I told Carlin I'll just come to a Clavig and pick you up. If I met you here, and then if you weren't here, then I'd go by Anjarig. And I says, well, gee, that'll mean I'll have to buy some new things because I got nothing here with me. No dishes, nothing. I'm just here. You know, we just came in for the trip. And if I knew this, you know, if I asked him, well, how much did he pay you? Oh, he paid me enough. And I could have got the plane to take me over there for about half the price of what he charged me. And I could have waited, you know, I could have got John to pick up all my stuff. But I went to Reindeer Station, and good thing I didn't spend this money that he'd been sending me on food, you know, they were good. So I bought a lot of food and I got some extra things, a few little more of the necessary dishes. Then we went to Tundernet with a boat. We just traveled right straight, one stop to Reindeer Station and traveled. And then they camped one night just along the beach of a river. Then we got to Tundernet. But, you know, I didn't know, see much of that trip because my daughter was sick then and I had to stay in. She got seasick.
What was the schooner?
Yeah, but it wasn't that rough, you know, but she wasn't used to it. I guess just a year old. And it was quite rough in the Mackenzie, that's from where she got sick. And then when we got to Tunanag, I found that Colin, that's the time he was telling me of all this money he'd lost and won back. But then we made our camp in Tunanag. We pitched up a tent and he's working in the dual line. And then the dual line camp laid everybody off in November, 56. End of November, yeah, and just kept 2 workers there. And my mom on her way from Tak to Delta with a mission boat stopped at Tunanag, and my mom was there, so we hauled her out and she stayed with us. That was just from September, October, November. For 3 months we stayed there. And then we went to the Delta. We went to Reindeer Station where he joined right into the skinning, you know, slaughtering. He worked 2 weeks there and the work was all over. So we went to his parents' place for about a week. Then we went to my auntie's place. And then I went to my granddad's place in Kaumayok. I think it was still that same. Yeah, that was the same year. He went to Donald and Colin. We spent most of the winter with family, visiting and helping. Then in March, we went to Kaumayo to really live there. I mean, not really live there, but we were gonna stay there for the whole spring. Then my granddad was ailing, you know, was pretty sick that spring. He wasn't in good health. He had aches and pains of every sort. Then from there, Colin and Donald, Joe was running some store, a clerk in the store, and Colin and Donald went into Inuvik. Got jobs at the Klavik Airport, Inuvik Airport.
E4.
Yeah. They call it E3. What did they call it?
E4.
I know, but another name too. Construction. They had another name for it, these natives. They had something like construction. They had another name for it, not just only E4.
Yeah.
But they started working up there. And I stayed out in a bush and I trapped. And then since then we then well, I stayed right from March, April, May. May the 18th or the 20th, somewhere about there, I came into town, and since we've lived in Inuvik.
But first down here.
Well,
in this tent.
We stayed in right at the airport.
Oh.
Right in. They had an Eskimo village right up there, right along the lake. Well, the people.
Oh, the construction people.
Yeah, the natives that were working there had tents along the lake, and they had to walk quite a ways up to the mess hall. And then that summer he worked there, and I don't know, somehow or another he switched on to another job right in East 3 here.
Mm.
We pitched camp where? Across the river, I think. No, we pitched camp right down by the river there where Jimmy Adams' tent is, and then we just did that until after breakup, and then breakup, then after water went down like this, you know, and if the ground dried, then we moved across the river. That was the spring. And 1950, no, 58 came along then. Because, I'm all lost now. 57 it would be.
Yeah.
We didn't stay across the river. We pitched, well, you know where this Peter